The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's June 19th, 2023, to be rebroadcast on June 21st, 2023 at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. Fran or I may be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening right now live, you can just make the comment below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. And if you can listen, if you want to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or fmradiofree.com. Ron's rant of the week. Sad note, very sad note. Gino Mader, taken way, way too early. We had a bad crash in the Tour of Swiss, the Tour de Suisse, this past week, and very, very unfortunate. Gino went down. I'll talk a little bit more about this in the show. Unfortunately, he crashed and did not recover from it. Another thing on a rant of the week. U23 Giro d'Italia. 31 riders were disqualified for hanging onto vehicles up the Stelvio Pass in the new, what they're now calling the next gen event. The Italian Cycling Federation president Cordiano Dagnoni said he was disappointed in the team's sporting directors after footage caught 31 riders in the under 23 Giro d'Italia hanging onto team cars and motorbikes on the famous climb of the Stelvio Pass. Anyway, we'll get more into that in the show, maybe. Gosh, all sorts of things here. Massachusetts has announced an $11.6 million funding for 68 local trail construction and enhancement projects across the Commonwealth. Even with that increased funding, you'd think this would be on a positive side, and it sort of is. But even with this increased funding, though, the program represents less than half of 1% of the Massachusetts DOT's annual spending on highway projects. Yeah, I'm ranting about it. And this year's funding level is a reduction from last year's when inflation is taken into account. Really? Less than half of 1%? Priorities, people! Bicycles, we're out here. We do good things. We don't burn gasoline. We don't pollute. We don't, you know, cause all sorts of global warming and all sorts of other things that are going on out there. Get a clue. Got it? Okay, I'm done. Positive side. On a positive side. Marius Skilmusa wins the Tour de Suisse. Keep your eyes on this 22-year-old guy. This kid, 22 years old, he's going to turn 23 in September. He is happening right now, up and coming. Very, very interesting. And this is the part I have to have Fran hang around here for. Another shout out to Gabe and his family in Maine. I received a really lovely, lovely package in the mail last week, and they sent me this shirt, which I am wearing right now. And Fran, there's a note that they sent along with it, and Fran's going to read it to you. It's a thank you note. Okay. Yep. Very nice. Are you going to read it?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. And so it says, "Dear Ron, thank you again for an awesome. You are the best pilot ever. Come see us in Maine sometime. Happy day, Gabe."
Yeah, the awesome was starred right here.
The awesome was starred.
Time
and Mom added in time at the Best Buddies Challenge.
Yeah.
And Charlotte wrote, so parents are Bill and Charlotte.
Yes, they are.
They wrote, "Hi, Ron. We really appreciate all you did for Gabe. And for your information, the T-shirt is one of his recent designs from Many Faces he drew to celebrate the Best Buddies of Maine, Portland Citizens Group. Hope you enjoy it, Bill and Charlotte."
So this is a Gabe designed shirt. So very, very cool. So if any of you have been following what I did with the Best Buddies, just a really, well, you know, it's a Massachusetts thing. So it's a wicked cool event. Very, very cool event. And I'm hooked. I'm totally hooked on it. And thank you so much, Bill and Charlotte and Gabe, for sending me the shirt. That was very, very kind of you and a big surprise. Anyway, let's move on. Let's see. Mechanical Minute and cycling tips. What do I have for you this week? Why is lube so important? Well, there's an open question.
I talked about that on my show.
You talk about that on your show in a very different manner than I talk about it on my show.
Hey, if you're perimenopausal, it's a very important topic.
Or if you ride a bicycle, it's a very important topic. So it prevents corrosion, reduces friction and drivetrain wear, while an under-lubricated chain increases friction by enabling too much metal on metal contact. An over-lubricated chain will attract dirt and grip, which will increase friction and drivetrain and drivetrain wear as well. So the thing is to find the sweet spot is what you're looking for. Drivetrain efficiency describes how much energy, usually described as power, because it can be measured in watts, you can put through the pedals that reach to the rear wheel to drive you and your bike forward. Under laboratory conditions, geared bicycle drivetrains have been shown to reach above 98% efficiency, meaning just 2% of energy inputted is lost to friction. Real-world conditions don't usually mimic those of a laboratory, though. So as well as correct lubrication, drivetrain efficiency is dependent on things such as cleanliness, chain line, and the size of the chain rings and cogs in your drivetrain. So this is why lube is important. You want to make sure there's not so much friction, because it makes the bike go smoother and makes you work less. So if your bike chain is talking to you, that would be the time when the chain makes I'm going to make a noise here that may or may not sound like your bike chain, but it'll sound kind of like zzz, zzz, zzz as you're riding along. It's a dry metal on metal sound. And if it starts squeaking and you actually hear a squeaking noise, it's actually screaming at you to please lubricate me. Because, you know, bicycles can talk. Because this is bicycle talk. This is what we do. Anyway, so you really kind of have to get it right. And you want to make sure you have enough lube on your chain and not too much lube on your chain. And I find that, you know, when I lube my chain, I am using a lubricant which gives me a solid 2 weeks worth of lubrication. And I also use it to wipe down the chain so that there's not too much lubrication on the chain. And I wipe it down the same thing. That clean the chain off with the same thing that I'm lubricating it with. So it really works well, and I get at least 2 weeks out of it before I have to lube it again. Not a big fan of artificial, weird, paraffin-type lubricants. I know they make your bike look pretty, but they just don't last. So anyway, my big one is made by Boeing Aircraft, and anybody who's out there who rides a bike knows what that is. So if you don't, then you can go to your local bike shop and they can fill you in. There's also a lot of really good lubes out there, but I did get a chance to try something recently, and it was supposed to be the next greatest best thing out there, and my chain talked to me within two rides. So you know what? Still like my old stuff. I'm kind of one of those, you know, curmudgeon old guys that gets kind of set in his ways as far as what I like and what I don't like, if you hadn't noticed that before. And so anyway, I'm a big believer in specific things that work really well and make it so I don't have to work on my bike a lot. because I spent my entire life working on people's bicycles. I still do. And what do you want to do when it's time to go ride your bike? Not work on your bike. You want to go out and ride your bike, which is nice. It's a good thing. By the way, that's why I'm like really digging this single speed bike that I built. I'm just really having a good time with it. I built one for Fran too. And I'm I don't chicken. Know if well, you're chicken for no reason. You're chicken for no reason whatsoever. It's just got one gear on it. That's all. There's nothing to go wrong. There's chicken. Nothing to be afraid of. It only has one gear.
I'm going to spin out.
That's pretty simple. You're going to spin out. Great. You know what? You're going to spin out with the exact same gear that I have when you're riding with me. So you're obviously going to go way faster than I do. Not. Don't worry about it. Just get on the bike and ride.
Worried.
Get on your bike and
get
ride.
Get on your bike and ride.
That's it. Right. Freddie said it best. So anyway, here we go. Now we're going to get into the show. So as we get into the show here, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Bahrain victorious rider Gino Mader. He was taken way too early. He's a young Swiss rider. He plunged into a ravine at the Tour de Suisse, involved in a crash with American rider Magnus Sheffield. Magnus came out with, I think, a concussion or something like that is what they were treating him for. He's okay, but... Gino is not so much. And stage six was actually canceled in the Tour de Suisse. And all the riders got together and they rode 20 miles in place of stage six. The Bahrain victorious riders all rode up front in ahead of their team car. There were two team cars. It's tragic. There's pictures all over the internet on this. And they rode in front of the team cars and they rode side by side all together for Gino at the end. Really, really sad. And then all the rest of the riders were a control lap behind them and rode behind them. And there were a number of riders who were wearing black armbands to, you know, basically to honor Gino. But it's sad when you get a kid that young who's just, you know, he's an up and coming and everyone loved him. No one had anything bad at all to say about him. And he just had a horrible crash and he went off the road and down into this deep ravine and it wasn't good. So anyway, we're a little sad by that, and that definitely, you know, it happens. Bicycle racing is dangerous. Let me be clear about this. Bicycle racing is dangerous. Did I happen to mention bicycle racing is dangerous, really, really dangerous? They were showing the motorcycles in the Tour de Suisse, and they were... they were showing the speedometer on the motorcycle, and these guys were descending between 50 and 60 miles per hour. I mean, just really, really fast. 50 to 60 miles per hour with switchbacks. You figure it out. That's bike handling. That's way, way, way beyond anything I ever was able to do.
Well, you've hit 50 miles an hour. You're crazy.
I've hit over 50 miles an hour.
I haven't.
It's, you know, it's just, you know, like I said, bike racing is dangerous. It's really dangerous. I mean, we got radared at 56 miles an hour going down the backside of Smuggler's Notch in the Stowe Road Race. We were going fast. It was fast. The police car was like overjoyed to come up to us afterwards and say, "I got you guys on radar at 56. It's like, yeah, well, that's fast. It is. And it's scary. It's really scary. There's a lot of that road just goes. There's a lot of road moving real fast underneath you when you're going at that speed. So anyway, Gino crashed on the descent of the Albula Pass, and which was the fifth stage of the Tour de Suisse. And as it made its way to La Punte, he plunged in a ravine, was found by the race doctor motionless in the water. Over 20 minutes of resuscitation, he was flown to Chur Hospital, where he died the following day as a result of the crash. So very, very, very sad. And now a little bit about Gino. He was born on January 4th, 1997, in the small village of Flauel, where he lived with all of his life. He was the youngster that combined cyclocross, track, and road racing. As first year junior, he started his international cycling career in 2014. He finished ninth in both the Tour de Pays and Tour de Pays des Vaudes and GP Rubeland, two of the toughest races in the junior circuit. Then he took fourth place in the European Championships, just 2 seconds behind the winner, Eduardo Alfini. So definitely an up-and-coming rider. On the track, he won the silver medal in the European Championships in the Omnium, followed a year later by World Championship silver in the team pursuit. The Swiss team consisted of, we won't even get into that. He won the Swiss Junior Omnium title. He ended his track career after he won it. On the road, he finished second in the Pays des Vaudes, and then he took the Swiss time trial title, finishing fifth in the World Championships race against the clock in Richmond. So obviously a very, very talented kid. From 2016, he moved to the under 23s. He didn't really have any success until May of 2017 with a sixth place in the Eschborn Frankfurt U23. Later that year, he finished 16th in the Tour de l'Avenir and third in the U23 Tour of Lombardy. In 2018, he started to show his real promise. The U23 Giro d'Italia, he was just short of stage victory from an early break, but he did win the Queen stages in both the Ronde des Lards and the Ronde le Tocamin le Most, where he won second stage. In those three mountain stages, he won thanks to an attack on the descent. This is where he got himself in trouble. According to contemporaries, it wasn't due to exceptional descending capabilities, but because the others looked at each other to chase. Mader had a very successful year. He also took third place in the final overall 2018 Tour de l'Avenir after Tadej Pogačar and Tymon Arisman, but ahead of many top pros of the present. Later that year, he played a leading role in the world title of Swiss teammate Mark Hirschi. Mader also won a stage in the Tour of Hainan. So, amazing kid. Unfortunate, very, very, very unfortunate. There's a great picture here of him in a sprint with Primoz Roglic and Paris-Nice. That was a big breakthrough year in 2021. Primoz Roglic beat him for a stage victory and then finished 10th on the final overall classification. Next was stage victories in the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de Suisse, followed by Olympic Games in Tokyo for the national team. After that, he scored the biggest success of his career so far when he finished 5th overall in the Vuelta a España and won the best young rider classification in 2022. He confirmed his class with second place Tour de France, second place in the Tour de Romandie. Okay, so Gino, unfortunately, is no longer with us. He just looks like he was probably a really fun guy. They've got lots of goofy photos with him. He's going to be missed. It's really, really sad, but I wanted to do a little tribute to him today. And then we're going to move on to the next interesting thing going on, and that is the U23 Giro d'Italia. All right, so guys, you know, I'm sure it was probably the gruppetto, you know, the guys that are the sprinters that are in the back and they need to keep their time up in order to be able to stay in the race so that they can sprint at the finish, and they're under a lot of pressure. But 31 riders disqualified for hanging onto vehicles up the Stelvio Pass. Give me a break. Come on, guys. I mean, don't you know that there's cameras everywhere? You can't get away with that kind of stuff. I mean, this is way more than, you know, the sticky bottle. you know, where the rider goes up to the team car, he's getting a water bottle replacement, and he kind of, you know, hangs on to the door of the car while he's getting his water bottle replacement. You know, they kind of turn their head the other way on those things because, you know, maybe they had to talk to him about something or whatever. But and it's also very tricky. I don't know if you've ever had the occurrence of being able to ride next to a team car or next to a car with an open window when you're riding along down the road. But it's tricky because you can't let your bike fall into the car or you will get crushed underneath the car. It's not a good thing. It's very dangerous. And it's something that only a professional should do if that. So it's definitely tricky. And the ones that really kill me are you see these team cars coming up alongside of a rider, and the rider's having a problem with either his seat height or he's having a problem with his derailleur, and they're leaning against the car and the mechanic is hanging out the window and working on the bike. And that just kind of blows me away that they have that kind of skill and ability. But anyway, they were caught hanging on to team cars and motorbikes, and the race jury excluded 24 riders on Wednesday night after reviewing the videos taken by fans and disqualified a further 7 on Thursday morning. Wednesday's fourth leg was the queen stage of the race, which had been rebranded as the Giro Next Gen. It ended up with the prestigious and difficult ascent of the Stelvio. So fans lined the sides of the climb, and the riders appeared not to notice that they were being filmed as they flagrantly broke the rules, with some chatting and laughing amongst themselves as they clung to the sides and backs of team cars. Of the riders disqualified, 24 were Italian and 7 were foreign, including Belgian cyclist Tijde Dekker, who won this year's Paris-Roubaix U23. 4 team members, staff members, and their team cars were also excluded from the race. What we saw was really offensive to those who correctly interpret this sport, Italian Cycling Federation President Cordano Degoni said on Thursday. They are images that really hurt. It's right to apply the rules, and I'm above all disappointed by the behavior of the sporting directors and their team cars, because they should be the first to teach their youngsters how to respect the rules. The riders and the teams could face further punishment from the Federation or even the International Cycling Union, the UCI, my favorite organization. Well, in this case, you know what? They were cheating. It wasn't good. It's not good. Not good at all. So, you know, they should be punished for it. You know, what do you got to say about that? So here we go back to the winner of the Tour de Suisse. Very interesting race. There were some big players in it, but Matteo Skilmusa, he won the Tour de Suisse. And I told you to keep your eyes on this guy because he really is kind of an up-and-coming star. He's young. He's really, really young, and he just won the Tour de Suisse. So the Tour de Suisse, just so that you know, is one of the two pretty major lead-ups to the Tour de France. It's where a lot of the teams test out their teams and see what they've got, see what kind of firepower they have, where their fitness levels are on their riders. And you know, I know Jumbo was there, and they were just doing their dance. They are just a powerful, powerful team this year, and that's going to be really, really interesting to watch when we get to the Tour de France. Who are they going to pick to be their GC guy? I mean, Remco Evenepoel was up on the podium. He was, ended up third place overall or something like that. And these guys were just, they're fast. And there's a lot of youth and it's really, really interesting. And Juan Ayuso from the UA Team Emirates, he blitzed a closing time trial at Tour de Suisse, and he finished in 32.25, enough to take the overall lead. He's 20 years old. 20 years old, and he also won a stage. So this, I mean, there's some things going on. I can't wait to see. The Tour de France is going to be a big, big deal this year. I think it's going to be a little bit more, well, not a little bit. It's going to be a lot more exciting than it has been in the past, and it's been pretty exciting the last few years. So I think last year was one of the best years I'd seen in as long as I can remember. And these new young riders are just coming in, and it's a different game. So I'm excited to watch the tour. Well, you know, to be a seasoned veteran now in the Tour de France, you're like 26, 27 years old. And that's not what I would call a seasoned veteran. Past years, it's been up to like 34 years of age that we've had riders that have competed successfully in the Tour de France. And here we go. So, yeah, it's going to be like a seriously interesting race. I can't wait. I can't wait to see results and the... you know, we're up for a real treat here when we've got a 22-year-old who wins the Tour de Suisse and a 20-year-old who's 9 seconds behind him, and Remco Evenepoel, who is a very solid rider, although they're now saying that he is now gaining his fitness back, and he was 45 seconds down. I mean, he's a proven member of the Jumbo team. Or no, actually, he's with the Quick-Step team. And Wilco Kelderman was 2 minutes and 9 seconds behind. He's from Jumbo Visma. There's going to be a really interesting tour coming up. Very, very interesting. So anyway, I'm excited. And I'm also excited because, why am I also excited? Because we did finally get a chance to watch the opening episode of Unchained. And oh my God, I mean, here is my advice to you if you're planning on watching Unchained. Do not watch Unchained just before you go to bed. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Give yourself some time.
There's a lot of shows I can't watch before bed because they give me bad dreams.
That didn't give me bad dreams. That
just made you wired.
Wired up afterwards. It was like, it's, you know, it'll, if you're an avid fan of bicycle racing and you don't get a tear to your eye when you're watching this thing, I don't know what to say. Get a hold of yourself. Figure it out. It's it was incredible. I can't wait to watch more episodes, but I really do have to make sure I have a buffer of time between watching the episode and getting myself ready for bed, because that didn't work that night. That's for sure. Good Lord, I could not fall asleep. It was crazy. So anyway, Unchained. Unchained is definitely something you wanna watch. I think that it's a documentary. For those of you who aren't familiar, haven't been listening to me over the last few weeks or so, it is a documentary, and it's on the Tour de France, and it's very... Whoops, there goes my camera. And it is very... It is very graphic. There is offensive language in it, because you get to listen to the race directors when they are either in a panic or you know, just being very, very excited.
And they're swearing.
And they are swearing, and it's fun. It's just really, really, really fun. It's as much fun, if not more fun, than watching the races. So, gosh, yeah, and it's on Netflix. Is that right, Fran? I think it's on Netflix. It's on Netflix, and it is worth every penny of a Netflix subscription for at least, you know, the 8 days that you get to watch this thing. It is an 8-episode series. So anyway, I'm psyched about it. It just makes me, it brings me back to the days. Now we're going to date ourselves here. It brings me back to the days when I first saw the John Tesh productions of the weekend update of the Tour de France on CBS. CBS used to broadcast for an hour a week. They would do a basic update of the Tour de France. The first time we had actually really ever seen European bicycle racing or the Tour de France on American television. And John Tesh did just an amazing, amazing job. Very dramatic, very well produced, very professional. But we only got to see an hour of what was going on all week. But it was still something to watch, and it was really fun. Hi, Rick. How you doing? Hi, Don. How are you doing? So like I said, I watched the opening episode of Unchained, and I am so hooked. But you might want to check into your sleep there on that one. Don't watch it late at night, please. All right. So I was cruising around my Streets blog, and I found the 15 best arguments for bike boosters, which I think is something I'd like to focus some attention to on the show today. We've got plenty of time to do this. And you know how I'm always talking to you about, you know, be an advocate for your sport and be an advocate for cycling in general and commuting and whatever it is there. But anyway, they broke it down into three different blocks, basically, is what it is. So the 15 best arguments for bike boosters. Here's part one. And these came out a couple of weeks ago, and it actually, a version of the article appeared in People for Bikes, and this is being republished with permission. It's part of a three-week series. Parts two and three are also here. So when you're going, if you've ever entered like a town hall meeting, and you go in and you're the bike guy, and if you are the bike guy or the bike gal, and you are known around town, they all know why you're there. You're there to say it again, over and over again. Why don't we have this? Why don't we have that? Why are we, you know, promoting cars and trucks? And why are we not promoting bicycles? You know, they hear it over and over again. But, you know, as I have said many times, and at the closing of almost every show, you come with solutions, not complaints or problems, right? But there's always a complaint or problem that brings you to the point where you have to present the solution to people that aren't thinking with an open mind. So if you've ever engaged in any lively discussion at all about this in front of your town, you just really need to, like, you gotta dress up your act a little bit here, okay? You need to start talking in a really, really positive way. And number one on the list here is bicycling is good for the planet. That is a, what do we call that, Fran?
What?
A D-U-H moment. Right. Duh. Yes, it's good for the planet. Of course it is. Didn't we just talk about this a few minutes ago? It doesn't pollute. It doesn't make noise. It's healthy. It's clean. It doesn't burn gasoline. Hello. Yeah, we use some petroleum products on our bicycles to keep our bikes from squeaking. But, you know, it's still, we just, it's, anyway. So it seems like a given, right? Utah Senator Mitt Romney's recent remarks are an indication. We're not all on the same page about climate benefits of getting more people on bikes. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, transportation makes up 28% of the total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. 28%! With 57% of those emissions coming from passenger vehicles, when we build more and better bike lanes, the environmental benefits are clear. Higher bike ridership, less driving, and an overall reduction in emissions. Yay, Mitt Romney! Cheers to you. Yeah. So researchers at the Carnegie Mellon Fund, found that even 10% of short car trips during peak afternoon travel were replaced with micro mobility, don't like that word, but that's okay, more than 4,800 car trips would not happen, decreasing vehicle miles traveled by more than 7,300 miles a day. While this would translate 2.76% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, it would only be possible with wide-scale bike lane deployment. This study confirms similar findings from McGill University that spotlight bicycle infrastructure in Montreal, as well as from the Institute of Transportation and Development Policy, which found new bike lanes lowered emissions in China, Bogota, Colombia, and other places. According to another European study, 10% of the population, if 10% of the population were to replace one car trip a day with a bike ride, know how I ask you that every show, overall carbon emissions from transportation would also drop 10%. 10% of the population, one car trip a day a week. One car trip a week, right? 10% reduction in emissions. This is not rocket science, folks. This is pure science. This is common sense. Anyway, I will move on because there's a bunch of points here. We've got 15 points to get through here, and I'm going to run out of time if I keep going on this. So, research done by Portland State University showed that if 15% of car trips were taken instead by an electric bicycle, we could see a 12% decrease in transportation-related emissions. Add in fact that bikes are one of the lowest carbon-emitting modes of transportation. It's safe to say that any way you look at it, bicycling benefits the environment. So bicycle's good for the planet. That's number one. Number two, if you build it, people will bike. Field of Dreams, anyone? Field of Dreams. For any of you who are familiar with the old Kevin Costner show movie, ask most people why they don't bike, and they'll likely name safety as a key concern. Yeah, they're afraid of the SUVs they drive around in. That's why. A nationwide survey from the National Institute for Transportation and Communities found that a whopping 2/3 of U.S. residents would be more likely to bike if they were separated from cars by a physical barrier. 2/3. That's huge. There is so much research that shows that people will bike if cities build good infrastructure. Overall, the average protected bike lane sees bike counts increase by 75% in its first year alone. Noticeably, bicycling in Sevilla, Spain increased 435% when the city added 86 miles of dedicated bike lanes. Even smaller transformations to include protected bike infrastructure can have a huge impact. After buffered bike lanes were installed on Philadelphia's Spruce and Pine streets, bike traffic increased by 95%, while intersections in Montreal and protected bike lanes saw 61% more bike traffic than comparable intersections with no bike infrastructure. There's also evidence that protected bike lanes are better for bike share. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, a 2022 upgrade brought a two-way protected bike lane to a section of Garden Street, where before they had only been had Sharrows and Door Zone bike lanes. The changes transformed the entire neighborhood. Bike mode share nearly quadrupled and increased by more than 2%. Even accounting for seasonal dips in ridership, bicycling in the area increased more than sixfold since the separated lanes were built. All right, so if you build it, they will come. It's all true. So anyway, I'm encouraging you to find this piece of information. I will actually put a link to it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page and save it somewhere so that you can use it the next time you go to make a presentation, because this information is it's great. It's just great information. Number three, yes, protected bike lanes are better than Sharrows or standard bike lanes, or as my friend calls the Sharrows, the toilet paper of bicycle safety. As a rule of thumb, if something's not going to be comfortable for all people, of all ages and abilities, they don't build it. For decades, U.S. traffic engineers assumed that people on bikes could almost always share the road with cars. But a shoulder, even a striped bike lane on a street with fast traffic, isn't as appealing place to ride a bike for most women, for most people, especially women and less experienced riders. Putting a bike symbol in the middle of a busy thoroughfare just does very little to make a place where parents feel comfortable riding with their children. I get it. I understand. Sharrows make me mildly nervous, as do the signs that go along with them that say, share the road. Share the road signs, in my honest opinion, are great tools for people who are driving motorized vehicles to yell at you to get out of the way, because they think it's the sign is actually indicated to the cyclist to share the road, not to them to share the road. Ask any person who drives a motorized vehicle what the share the road sign is for. Ask them. They'll all tell you the same thing. It's for those bikes to understand that they should share the road. I hear it all the time. Anyway, so yeah, protected bike lanes are way better than sharrows. All right, so while sharrows might have a place in small towns or on low stress streets, protected bike lanes should be the default for roadways with speeds above 25 miles per hour or when vehicular volumes exceed 6,000 average daily. All right. Number four. Here's a no-brainer. This one Fran can pipe up on. Bikes are good for public health. Well, no kidding.
Of course.
No kidding. People living in bike-friendly communities tend to have better health outcomes due to increased physical activity, improved cardiovascular health, and reduced stress levels. A 2015 Columbia University study showed that New York City's $10 million investment in bike and pedestrian improvements resulted in an estimated societal health savings benefit of $230 million. Put another way, every $1,300 that New York invested in building bike lanes provided benefits equivalent to an additional year of life at full health over the lifetime of all city residents. There's some numbers for you. According to the British Medical Journal, regular bicycling is associated with a 41% decrease in the risk of death from any cause, a 45% decrease in the risk of cancer, a 46% decrease in the risk of heart disease, and the benefits don't stop there. PLOS Medicine study showed that people who began bicycling regularly at age 50 saw a 20% decrease in the risk of type 2 diabetes. Where do I begin? Where do I end? I'm just going to keep ranting away. That's all I can do. Bike lanes, number five. Bike lanes and trails are good for business. Say it again, Fran. Duh. All right, DUH, yes. Big one. In response to proposed newly built bike lanes, it seems like store owners often complain about the reduced parking and the customers lost. All the evidence, however, points to the fact that installing protected bike routes tends to boost the local shops. For example, after a hugely contested bike lane was installed on Skillman Avenue in Queens, New York, data shows that sales in the stores, bars, and restaurants on the 7-block commercial stretch collectively rose by 12%. So if you someone came up to your business that you have in a busy downtown area and said, I've got a way to increase your business by 12%. And they look at you and go, okay, sure, 12%, that's a good number. How are you going to do that? I'm going to take away your parallel parking and I'm going to put a bike lane in. What do you think the result is going to be from that? They're going to be a little skeptical, for sure. But other streets in New York have seen similar results. After the construction of a protected bike lane on 9th Avenue in Manhattan, local businesses saw a 49% increase in retail sales. On other streets in the borough, the average was only 3%. And a redesign of the city's Union Square to include a protected lane resulted in 49% fewer commercial vacancies compared to 5% more throughout Manhattan. And that's just in New York. In Salt Lake City's Broadway, replacing parking with protected bike lanes increased retail sales. There's also evidence that customers who arrive at retail stores by bike spend the same amount per month compared to the people who arrive in car. They tend to make smaller purchases but return more frequently. That, right. What's more, the neighborhoods that don't require a car to move around are more economically resilient. Bike trails and greenways also represent communities economically by attracting visitors, promoting job growth in tourist-related industries, and revitalizing communities through the trail town model, trail-oriented development. All right, there you go. There's your first 5 of 15. The next on the list of arguments for bike boosters. Boy, we're going to have to get scooting here on these. More bike infrastructure can benefit drivers too. This is the big argument right here, okay? It's important to remember that even if the infrastructure is perfect, not everyone will choose to ride a bike. Diehard drivers can still become bike advocates, however, especially when they realize that the more people that ride bikes, the less car congestion there is. Again, DUH. This was a key message point in Austin, Texas, where the city completed 115 miles of new bike lanes in just 2 years. By shifting traffic from cars to bikes and making it easier to reach transit stops, Austin's planned 400-mile protected bike lane network is projected to increase city's traffic capacity by more than 25,000 trips per day at about the same cost ratio as a single expressway widening. In 2014, New York City Department of Transportation study found that after a 6-foot buffered bike lane was installed on Columbus Avenue, car volumes were unaffected and that those cars moved 35% faster. According to the NYDOT statement, the study found that on corridors with protected bike lanes, traffic flow was maintained or improved on the average because of the enhanced organization of the roadway. Hello. All right, number 7, protected bike lanes and reduced speed save lives. Well, there's another DUH. These are all kind of like, you know, DUH. Duh. Time and time again, we see that when speed limits fail, safety rises because the likelihood of a fatality increases exponentially with vehicle speed. Even small reductions in speed limits can have an outsized effect. The Highway Safety Manual shows that deadly crashes can be decreased by 17% if speeds are reduced by just 1 mile per hour. While a separate study from Sweden's Lund Institute of Technology found that 10% reduction in average led to 34% fewer fatal crashes. Wow, 10% reduction. So, a widely celebrated success story comes from Spain, where the speed limit on a single-lane urban road was lowered to 18.5 miles per hour. Road deaths fell by 14%. For cyclists, deaths were cut almost in half. This is good news as cities nationwide lower speeds and... Sorry about that. That lower speeds... I just lost my place here. I'm sorry. After protected lanes were stalled in New York City, injuries for those road users were reduced by 40 to 50%. Similarly, protected bike lanes in Montreal led to a 28% decrease in injuries. The 2019 study of 12 cities also found that protected bike lanes decreased fatalities for all road users. That includes cars and trucks, by the way. Why is that? Because it offers a traffic calming situation. When you've got a protected bike lane right there, all right, you're going to, the cars and trucks are going to normally and naturally slow down, and therefore they're going to be safer too. This is not rocket science, folks. It really isn't. So Barbara here said, Barbara, hello, Barbara, how you doing? Did you notice that when the repaved and painted Route 66 by the Maine Moose, they failed to include a bike lane? Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah. Well, that's your state of Connecticut Department of Cars and Trucks talking right there. The Department of Transportation does not converse well with vulnerable users. This is a problem that we have out there, like you and I, Barbara, of not presenting ourselves well. And I'm not pointing any fingers. I'm as guilty of it as anyone is. We need to, every time there is a road revamping of any kind or improvement of any kind, there should be a voice heard for vulnerable users. But it's not set up that way. Our infrastructure isn't set up that way. This is a function that I would really, really love to see Bike Walk Connecticut get involved with, because we need a full-time lobbyist in the state house. We really need somebody up there that can do that kind of work. Anyway, I'm going to move on here because I'm going to run out of time. Number 8, bikes help reduce the cost of living and make cities more affordable. There you go. In 2021, U.S. households spent an average of $10,961 on transportation. How's that for a number, Franny? Yeah. Making it the second largest household expense after housing. 1 in 4 U.S. adults suffers from transportation insecurity, a phenomenon that often has an inequitable impact on low-income families. Increasing access to low-cost modes of transportation like bikes and safe places to ride them effectively reduces this often overlooked household expense and ensures communities remain affordable for everyone. The Housing and Transportation Affordability Index is a great tool to determine the neighborhood-level housing and transportation costs for your community. Number 9, housing policy and bike policy are intertwined. The right kind of housing policy can make our communities more bike friendly. When we create transit-oriented neighborhoods, remove parking requirements, allow more infill housing in existing urban areas, and permit building of accessory dwelling units and multifamily housing, we naturally start to create places where destinations are closer together and people feel more comfortable biking. The U.S. is in the midst of a severe housing crisis, forcing residents to live increasingly far away from important destinations. Adopting climate-friendly land use policies promotes a kind of mix of land use in close proximity to one another. When people's homes are closer to their basic needs, jobs, grocery stores, schools, pharmacies, etc., they're more likely to ride their bike for daily trips. For those who drive, trips are considerably shorter. Number 10, parking reform is the key to building bike-friendly cities. Oh my God, I could go crazy on this. The U.S. has about 2 billion parking spots, which translates to about 7 parking spaces for every car. How about that statistic, huh? And parking is expensive for new developers to build. It can cost between $40,000 and $60,000 per parking space, increasing housing costs for everyone and taking valuable space away from development. You can put 10 bicycles in a parking space. Just saying. What's more, fewer homes have led to a slew of intersecting issues: a national housing shortage, an increase in home prices, and growing equity. Lower income families who drive less and use transit more inevitably end up paying for infrastructure they don't need, while drivers are subsidized for their car use. When parking is required, buildings are forced to spread further and further apart, decreasing the area's walkability and leading to urban sprawl, which swallows more and more land to sustain the same population. This in turn pushes people to drive more, upping greenhouse gas emissions, while the ensuing traffic makes it harder for everyone to get where they need to go. Essentially, the plethora of free car storage is at the root of a number of societal woes. A much better investment is a network of protected bike lanes and trails. Less parking means more proximity, since more people only want to bike 1 or 2 miles. The more destinations you have in that radius, the better a place becomes for bicycling. That's only possible, however, if you're not required to build big parking lots. Thus, parking reform is the key to building bike-friendly cities. I've got 5 more of these to go. They're coming in next week. I will continue this because this is just, It's common sense brilliance, and the story is the best 15 arguments for bike boosters. I have part 3 coming up next week, and we will talk more about this because this is all great information. Again, I will share this on my Bicycle Talk Facebook site. I'm going to try to push and promote this as much as I can because this is quality information when you're going in to present solutions, not problems, to your local governments. We can win this battle. We totally can. This is not a difficult thing. When the common sense of what we do as bicyclists out there comes through and starts making dollars and cents to your towns and communities, and they start seeing how much money they're going to save or not have to spend, becomes a no-brainer, really does. So, you know, this is something I am going to continue to pursue next week. We will get back to it in a week, and I will see you then. In the meantime, let's wrap this show up. Events. Remember, the bicycle game on the early history of bicycles in Hartford is still ongoing on 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut, at the State Historical Society. Fun thing to go check out if you haven't seen it yet. The 110th edition of the Tour de France begins on July 1st. Woohoo! The clock is ticking. Here we go. The 78th division of the Vuelta a España takes place on August 26th. And we've got the MADE, which is www.made.bike. It's a new industry and consumer bike event highlighting the craft of handmade bicycles. And they will be August 24th to the 27th in the Rose Quarter in Portland, Oregon.
Yay!
The Quiet Corner Bike Tour, presented by the Thread City Cyclers, is dated on Sunday, July 23rd, 2023. There's more information on that on the Facebook site. You can check that out. Also, you can go to the threadcitycyclers.com and you'll find all the information there. August 19th, 32nd Annual Steeplechase Bike Tour. It also features an 18-mile gravel ride for all you new gravel enthusiasts. It's there. We got it. We did it. And that would be at the steeplechasebiketour.org. Saturday, September 30th, the Charter Oak Park in Manchester and the Rotary organization in Manchester has Rotary in Motion, a free event. You should check that out too. If there are bicycle events involved there, there's bike trails involved there. Kind of a cool thing. Finishing points. Sad time for professional cycling. RIP, Gene Ohmader. This sport is super fun, but it's also super dangerous. Please be careful out there. Please, please, please. Going careening down hills at super high speeds is for the professionals, and even the professionals can have some trouble with that. Don't forget about the bicycle game and the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. Have you checked out that new Netflix trailer yet, Unchained? Or check out Unchained. It's not even a trailer anymore. It's an actual series, 8 weeks. Getting closer to the Tour de France. Are you ready to become a bicycle advocate? I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and join the revolution of change. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, Fran Storch, and we are going to be back next week. You can listen to past episodes on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. And this is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. I want to ride my bicycle.